It's Thursday, February 19th. Welcome to the show, everybody. Adam Azer, Scott White, Al Melchior. This is Fantasy Baseball Today on CBSSports.com. And I will once again throw it to you to tell everybody about all the great video you've been doing on the website.
Lots and lots of great video. We have done team outlooks, and now we're moving into Scott's positional tiers and doing videos on those position by position.
Now, the nice thing about those videos, and really a lot of the videos that you're going to see playing at the top of the columns, is they're only tangentially related to the columns. So it's not like you can just read the column and hit pause on the video and you'll be covered. You know, it's new, additional content. You can learn more by investing that 2 to 3 minutes watching the video. So,
yeah,
I think you should do it.
You know, even though it's not our network, like I feel like I just saw the More You Know star just kind of whiz by during that.
And I'm enjoying CBS Cares, right?
CBS
Cares. Our version.
We care that you know a lot about these players.
I'm enjoying the individual player previews that are on the player pages. Those are good. They're quick. They're fun. They're informative. They'll help you get ready for fantasy.
My favorite's Dan Heron that I did.
Oh, I haven't seen that one.
You might not research Dan Heron much, but I recommend you watch the video because it was fun.
I think Dan Heron could have a nice year. What do you think?
Depends how willing he is to have a nice year.
Yeah. It depends where he's having that year.
It's going to be the Marlins, no? And then all the reports, I thought, were
as of now, but...
He's either going to have a nice year with the Marlins or a nice year with his family.
There you go.
Retire.
He's a professional, so yeah, he'll pitch well for the Marlins.
Do you think there's a chance Dan Heron pitches for another team?
Oh, yeah.
You think so? But I thought they were pretty intent on keeping that 10 mil, and I guess they could do that, right? They could still trade him and keep the money?
Yeah. In fact, that's exactly what they could do.
Gotcha. All right, we'll keep an eye on a guy that's probably not going to be drafted in any mixed leagues. Injuries, news, and notes, and your emails and your tweets. Email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com and put baseball podcast in the subject line. Tweet us at Al Melk, CBS, M-E-L-C, at CBS Scott White, and at Adam Azer, A-I-Z-E-R. Recently I asked you, why not just put Melchior? And you said, well, how do you spell it? You know, it's tough to spell. Apparently it's difficult to pronounce. Did you listen, Al?
Not yet, no. I've been meaning to.
I just did. Okay, so Al did a mock draft of just prospects, right?
Yeah. I've only been told about this episode. So I'm not, I guess that's what they were talking about,
yeah,
but I haven't heard it yet, yeah.
So the rotowire.com guys have a podcast, and I was alerted to what happened on one of their podcasts. They butchered Al's name. So I was like, I got to hear this. I listened to it just now before we started our podcast today. It is two podcasts ago. As you listen, they did one today, I think, or very recently. And the previous one, they talked about a draft they were doing, and they were saying some of the guys who were in the draft, and then Al Manker, am I pronouncing that right?
Not at all.
And the other guy goes, I think it might be Melchior. Like, I don't know, but I follow him.
If we were playing Family Feud, that would be the number one response.
Melchior?
Yeah,
it's very,
yeah,
very
that
funny.
That was when Al was writing for the site, on a freelance basis,
right,
for a couple years before you came on in this role. And so I saw his stuff on the site, but I hadn't met him personally. And that's how I always assumed it was pronounced, was Melchior.
Really?
Yeah, even though Choir would have the O before the I, and his name has the I before the
NC?
O.
But
as we established with the Babip Babip thing, you don't really know much about how to pronounce things. So. By the way, that's not meant to pick on the RotoWire guys. They dedicate their time to prospects, which is very impressive. And I've been there before where you're about to read a name that you didn't expect to be so difficult, and you're like, oh, crap, what am I going to do? Al, you can be Manker, Manker, or Melchior today. What would you prefer?
Well, you know, the other two are new to me, so I feel like I should try. Let's try out Manker.
Manker. Manker it is.
In there.
We're going to talk about Miguel Cabrera, Kenley Jansen's injured, Bruce Chen's back in the news. We got a Danny Santana question, some keepers, Lincecum, all that stuff. Injuries, news, and notes. So Detroit is optimistic about Miguel Cabrera being ready for opening day. And this is an article that came out, and really nothing all that new. But here's tweet of the day, number one, from Charlie Little. How early do you draft injured studs, Miguel Cabrera and Joey Votto?
Well, we've been talking a lot about taking Cabrera as early as second. That's if I had the number two pick, that's where I'd be taking him. Votto, just because there's more than just the health status that's a question mark for him, I think I can get him at a bargain price. So I could see taking Votto like the fourth round.
Yeah, and I would also make the distinction that Votto has missed significant time, too, the last 3 years with injuries. Cabrera hasn't really missed much of any time yet with his injuries. So I'm not so worried about Cabrera missing time when that's still something of a concern with Votto.
But in terms of the industry, you two are going to be the highest, among the highest, on Miguel Cabrera this year. As we mentioned on a previous podcast, it was in labor.
Yes.
The labor draft, Miguel Cabrera went 10th.
Yep.
And you guys would be comfortable taking him second. I wouldn't.
Yeah.
But I certainly would take him before 10th.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe in Roto, I might shy away from taking him second, which is
why. What's
probably
the difference?
That's what labor is Roto. Peripherally, he's so good, and that boosts his value in head to head leagues. And you need more outfielders in Roto, which are the other guys, or some of the other guys I would consider with the second spot. I'd probably take McCutchen second in Roto. I'm starting to lean that way.
Okay. Al, you're still Miggy second in Roto?
Yes.
All righty. Dodgers closer Kenley Jansen is out 8 to 12 weeks after foot surgery. In 2014, he had a kind of a rough start. He struggled in May and June, but he finished as a top five closer, 2.76 ERA, bit of a high whip for an elite closer at 1.13, but 19 walks, 101 strikeouts. Had a good year. Meanwhile, Koji Uehara said he was pitching hurt last year, not fatigued. That was the whole thing. He was fatigued. He said he was hurt. And just reading the Boston Globe article, they broke down the numbers very appropriately. He had a 1.27 ERA and a 0.75 whip, Uehara did, through August 15th. And then the following six games, he gave up 10 earned runs on 14 hits and 4 2/3. Everything just fell apart after he was unbelievable through mid-August.
You know, I saw this report, and my reaction was kind of, nah, duh. Like, I don't think it was some big secret he was hurt, even though they weren't specifying what exactly was wrong.
Right. But you guys have him a little bit low in your rankings, 16th for Scott, 11th for Al. That's
who
he
has. 41, right?
Yeah, and he's got injury history.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not okay. Not necessarily too low on him, just based on how great he's been for 2013 and a lot of 2014. So I just want to talk about closers. I'm going to read this tweet of the day number two from Elliot Smilowitz. See, I almost butchered that name. Is it Smilowitz? Is it who's a reliever that is not currently slated to be a closer but could end up with 20 plus saves this year?
I've got a list of six names.
Oh, wow.
But there's one, and I'm guessing, Scott, if you had to come up with one guy top of mind, it'd probably be this guy.
Oh, me too.
Ken Giles?
No, that's a great call, though.
Thank you. Who you got?
Soria.
He's one of the others.
I took him in our AL-only mock draft yesterday one of the last rounds, and I was very happy about that.
You
That's
should
Joaquin
have been happy
Soria
about that.
For newcomers.
Yeah, Joaquin Soria. He's on the Tigers, and I have no faith in Joe Nathan.
It looks like Joe Kim, but it's Joaquin.
True.
This is Baseball Names 101. Anyway, back to you, Al.
Thank you, Scott.
Yes.
Today, and there's a cold front moving. I thought the Soria pick was really great, and that's he's probably after Giles, the one I think that's got the next best chance. Speaking of Uehara, Edward Mujica would be most likely backing him up, so I think he's got a shot at it. Jordan Walden now with the Cardinals. If Rosenthal struggles again, I think he's got a shot. We've talked in past podcasts about Sergio Romo, and neither of us being totally convinced that Casilla can hold on to the job. And then finally, Glenn Perkins with the forearm issue late last year. I worry that maybe there's an elbow issue lurking in his future, and then Casey Fien probably would be the guy to back him up.
I got a few other names, pulled up my relief pitcher tiers column, which is in progress, like all the tiers columns. Actually, I think catcher and first base are already up. So Andrew Miller would be one. I guess he's kind of competing for the role. Tyler Clippard, he might start out replacing Doolittle, but torn rotator cuff, that seems like it could become something longer. Pat Neshek, if he beats out...
Gregerson?
Yeah, Luke Gregerson. Kevin Jepson, as well as Brad Bach... Gosh, I'm having trouble saying names now. Kevin Jepson, as well as Brad Boxberger and Grant Balfour are going to be in the mix with Jake McGee down, and I could see one of them just keeping the job when he's healthy. Kevin Quackenbush, remember he replaced Joaquin Benoit late last year, and Benoit has an injury history. Jason Mott, the Cubs gave him a pretty nice deal, and he has a closer history. And did you mention Bobby Parnell, Al?
I did not.
No, I had a.
I kind of left out guys that were kind of semi-closers already anyway, and you hit on those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, closers are always a lot of situations in flux. What about Kenley Jansen, guys? Let's talk about this. So, you know, obviously he's a high-end closer, but out 8 to 12 weeks with the foot surgery. What do you think about the Dodgers situation right now?
Well, I'm not too excited about any of the potential replacements, and I wouldn't pursue them. Peralta, Brandon League would, I think, be the top options there. But I just worry more about Jansen's value. I think clearly he's still draftable because you're talking about 12 weeks, and I think that builds in the time that he would be working his way back, not just the recovery from the surgery itself. So let's say, worst case scenario, you're talking still about three quarters of a season. As long as he's near his skill levels of the past few years, that's somebody you want to spend at least $10 on. But I'm just concerned a foot injury. I mean, if there's any kind of lingering effect there, I would think that could be pretty damaging.
Yeah, the good thing is, like, it was a growth that was removed from his foot. It wasn't like a broken bone,
right?
Or a plantar fasciitis,
and it wasn't
like
a facial fracture like Aroldis Chapman last spring. And remember how his value, it plummeted after that. And certainly the timetable wasn't as clear as it seems to be for this. But he came back, I think, mid May, and his final numbers were studly. I mean, he had more than 100 strikeouts. Jansen is close to the same skill level, so maybe we should learn from that experience and not downgrade him too much, particularly in roto leagues where you don't necessarily need him delivering saves right away, just as long as the totals are there.
Right. What about a league, 12-team points league, where you start two relief pitchers? It includes all the RP-eligible guys like Carlos Carrasco, and there are a bunch of guys kind of lower end, but there are closers available on the waiver wire. Does Jansen get drafted in that format?
Oh, he gets drafted, I would think.
And you just stash him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he could be really, really good if you can kind of wait. And that's the kind of league where you will be able to wait it out. So there will be replacements available. All right, let's move down the list here of news and notes before we get to the emails and the more tweets. Fox Sports reports that the Dodgers may sign Cuban infielder Hector Olivera to play third base. Is that somebody that would be draftable if that happens?
I think so, and there's a number of other. I think there were a total of five teams that were rumored. I guess the Dodgers are considered the front runners. I noticed the Marlins were also mentioned, and I think that kind of makes some sense. And you know, we talked about Prado in yesterday's podcast, and you know, I think that'd be kind of a nice situation there. But to get back to your question, I would think they're talking about potential for like mid-teens home runs with a decent batting average.
And more draftable for a seasonal league than Yoan Moncada, who should sign pretty soon. And we expect to be in the minors for a lot, if not all of this year.
Yeah, probably starting in Class A, so he'd have a ways to go. Yeah.
Oakland signed Barry Zito to a minor league deal, and Cleveland signed Bruce Chen to a minor league deal. Let's play Does It Matter? Does it matter?
No.
No. I thought maybe because the Indians do need a lefty, or at least I perceive they need a lefty in the rotation. It would be nice for them to have a lefty in the rotation. But TJ, man. House, of course, is there.
Yeah, if they go with Chen over House, there's going to be riots in this building.
even if somehow he worked his way into the rotation, I don't think it would be good.
Ryan Howard is going to be Philadelphia's starting first baseman. There were some rumors about that. Tim Lincecum is going to be San Francisco's fifth starter with Yusmeiro Petit and Ryan Vogelsong in the bullpen. But Tim Hudson is behind in his rehab from offseason ankle surgery, so that could put one of those two in play. And Lincecum's
draft.
Not very good. So no. If you were in an NL only league, would you draft Yusmeiro Petit as a good stash for an eventual rotation spot?
NL only, yes, I would.
Baltimore closing in on signing Everett Cabrera. Here's tweet of the day number 3. It's from Peter Colton. He says, I'm curious about Jonathan Scope at second base. He wasn't brought up in your position preview. And Everett Cabrera, could he steal the job now?
Everett Cabrera convinced me last year that he's not very good. He was the one Biogenesis guy who, I don't know if he was the one, but he was one of the few who just didn't pass the test the year afterward.
Yeah, but you know, yeah, he's a good signing as a pinch runner. You know, he's fast.
Yeah, well, and Jonathan,
but Scope didn't do anything.
Scope
either.
Is not very good offensively either. Yeah.
But Scope, you, because he has power, you at least see. I don't think if I'm looking at this from the Orioles front office perspective, I don't see Scope's rookie season as a failure or really even a disappointment. I mean, it was first year on the job and he hit about 15 home runs, and that's not enough for me to say, no, this guy isn't our answer at second base.
Let me just say this for Cabrera. Well, he was hurt last year, right?
Eventually. I don't know if he started out hurt.
No, I'm not sure I buy Biogenesis as a reason for his...
I don't know either. But...
I mean, there's all kinds of problems there, legal problems.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
okay, yeah. So is this the kind of thing that would scare you off from drafting Jonathan Scope in a deeper format?
No.
Well, I mean, putting myself in the shoes of somebody who would consider it, a little bit, yeah. I think it makes sense. I mean, at least there's some competition there.
Well, no, I get what you're saying, that Scope isn't very good for fantasy, so that might keep me from drafting him in a deeper league. But I don't think Cabrera really – I don't think Cabrera really moves the needle.
There was some news about Bobby Parnell with ESPN saying that Parnell expects to regain the Mets closer's job when he comes back from Tommy John surgery, which could be in April. Henry Mejia, as a reliever last year, had a 2.72 ERA. He had 28 saves and 31 chances, but I just don't remember him being that good. He's got kind of a high whip, and he walks a lot of batters. So who do you think is going to be the Mets closer in July?
I think it'll be Parnell.
Think so?
Yeah. I'm sorry, just real quick to get back to Scope, because just as you were transitioning there, we did an AL-only draft yesterday, and Scope was not taken. So
that was a 10-team AL-only draft with reserve rounds, though. It was pretty deep.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that, by the way. Didn't know that I would. The NL-only drafts I don't really like as much because the hitters are so much worse, I feel. But I don't know. I thought this one was fun. I enjoyed it.
Well, I waited till, I think, round 12 or 13 to take my third pitcher. So, you know, the inverse is true there. I don't like any of the pitchers in the American League.
I liked the pitchers up until probably like round 15 or so, and then they got horrible. But like Shane Green was a late pick. I thought there were some pretty good pitchers kind of late. Like your fourth pitcher could have been good. But you waited too long.
The one position where I noticed the earliest drop off was outfield, actually. After the top 25 or so, it was just like there were some sleepers out there, but nobody you felt like you wanted to trust in your starting lineup.
And I forgot how bad of a year Adam Eaton had.
Yeah.
Because I was looking at him in the queue and I
wasn't that bad. He finished strong.
It was not what I expected.
What did he hit? Like 8 home runs? Oh, 1 home run?
Well,
yeah, he didn't have much power, but he hit over 300. I mean, it's hard to say that's a bad year. He hit like 330.
It's easy to say that's a bad year.
He hit like 330 from June
on. He hit 1 home run.
I don't care. Well,
he didn't steal enough bases.
That's not what he's asked to do.
If you're not going to steal a bunch of bases and you hit 1 home run.
Oh, you know, here's the stat. Well, I don't have the exact date. But basically, if you take that date where he heated up, which was around midseason, I think a little before, and he hit like 330 the rest of the way, he had 60 he was on a 60 extra base hit pace during that stretch. So it's not like he didn't show any power.
Well, that's good in points leagues, which that was.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah, he didn't do as badly as I remember because he had a 362 on base, which is pretty good. But yeah, only 15 steals.
Let me come up.
One home run and 15 steals does very little for you in fantasy.
But you're not going to draft Eaton for power.
Yeah, but with all those extra base hits.
No, but give me like 8 home runs.
With all those extra base hits, he was a he was a worthy starter during it looks like May 22nd on is the stretch I'm talking about.
In points leagues.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, wait, it's not May 22nd. You know, I want to find the right stretch. Okay, it was June 13th on. He hit 333 with about a 60 extra base hit pace and 841 OPS during that stretch. 10 steals. So that's a little less than half a season. He hit 333 with 10 steals and 26 extra base hits. So I feel like he really showed something then after a sluggish start when he hit only 251 with the 646 OPS before then. And I know I had him in some mixed leagues and I was basically starting him every week because he was delivering numbers there.
He made me totally forget the other Adam Eaton. I forgot the other one even existed, the pitcher.
Well, shame on you for that. And Homer Bailey behind in his rehab from a torn flexor tendon in his forearm, but says he could be ready for opening day. And the Yankees may use a sixth starting pitcher at times in April and May, according to MLB.com. Brian Mitchell, Esmil Rogers, Adam Warren, and Chase Whitley. Brian Mitchell, Esmil Rogers, Adam Warren, and Chase Whitley could be options as the Yankees' sixth starting pitcher.
Shouldn't they first work on getting five?
Yeah, I would say so. But that's not good, I think, for Tanaka, Pineda, because you're going to lose some two-start weeks if that's the case.
Well, yeah, long-term it might be good because they probably do need the rest.
It might be.
Yeah.
It might be. Let's do some emails and tweets. Again, it's fantasybaseball@cbsi.com and at Al Mencor, or whatever it is, on Twitter. Matt from the Bronx says, Dear Gene, Alex, and Craig. Gene, Alex, and Craig. He says, think Ricky Bobby, which is a very funny movie, but I don't remember who Gene, Alex, and Craig are.
Ricky Bobby?
Yeah, it's a funny movie, right?
Yeah, a little. Yeah, it's funny. It got a little tedious at times, but, you know, it came back.
Talladega Nights. Did you guys watch the SNL special?
I didn't, and I wish I had.
Yeah, I wasn't home, so I called the girlfriend. I told her, please DVR the SNL special tonight. I didn't even know about it until that day. And so on Tuesday, we went to watch it, and it turned out she DVR'd the red carpet special before the SNL special and not the SNL special.
And that's why you're here.
Yeah, I was like, that's it. I'm going home. Oops. Anyway, I saw Celebrity Jeopardy. It was awesome. Very funny. Here's the question from Matt. My league is switching over from strikeouts to strikeouts per nine. How would this change the value of pitchers, and what should I look for when evaluating them?
Relievers become a lot more valuable because now they dominate three categories instead of two.
Yeah, it's so how would you structure your pitching staff?
I might punt on wins, or maybe not completely, but halfway, I might. Yeah. I've never played in a league like this, so I'm just totally talking off the cuff. But
yeah, it's the sort of thing it really does, you know, help to kind of go through a season and tweak. Because my initial strategy would probably be just to, you know, go maybe one reliever deeper and not change it a lot. But yeah, I may find that that's not enough to take advantage of the category.
How many relievers average more than you're not going to know this off the top of your head, but how many of them average more than a strikeout per inning? Like, do you think there are a lot?
Yeah.
Yeah.
More. Oh, right. Because I was just thinking of the closers. I wasn't even thinking of the setup.
Yeah,
there are a lot.
I would guess in somewhere in the neighborhood of a couple dozen or maybe even a little more than that.
More than a strikeout per inning? It's more than that. I can find the answer pretty quickly thanks to the Baseball Reference Play Index.
Just talk to Siri and be like, Baseball Reference, how many pitchers average more than a strikeout per inning? Baseball Reference will figure out a way. Ash in West Bromwich, England. Dear Lester, Lorne, and Gus. What is going on?
The first Lorne I know is Lorne Michaels, but I don't know who Lester and Gus are.
Yeah. Given the injury concerns with Troy Tulowitzki, if you were to draft him in, say, the early to mid second round, possibly even late first round, would you be inclined to take another shortstop with your 6th, 7th, or 8th round pick to cover any potential time on the DL Tulo may have, or do you ride with him and wait to take another shortstop in the later rounds? And in either scenario, who would you take and when?
Well, I would definitely wait. I just think that's a big loss of value to go that early on shortstop when you already have Tulowitzki. If I were to go, well, if I were going late round, go ahead.
Well, he's not shortstop eligible yet, but Marcus Semien comes to mind as a sleeper.
That's my first thought. Yeah.
I don't know if Gene Segura would last that late, but I'm not ready to totally give up on him.
Yeah, we're thinking alike on the late round options.
Yeah, I'm not totally ready to give up on like Brad Miller and Jed Lowry either, but they're a little beyond, I think, the standard mixed league realm. So.
Yeah, and the first part of that question, the shortstop you're going to get in the 6th, 7th, or 8th round is just not going to be a good enough player.
It's one somebody's going
to
reach for, probably. Yeah. Yep. That's not a great place to take a shortstop. By the way, I have an answer for relievers with 50 innings or more. So, you know, I'm asking a lot of them. That's not including, like, Ken Giles, who I think had, like, 45. 50 or more, those who averaged a strikeout per inning or more, 64.
Oh my God.
Okay, yeah. I mean, that's a total game changer, strikeouts per nine. A.W. Mathis on Twitter. Oh, by the way, Lester Lorne and Gus are from Fargo. I believe the TV show. I'm not sure about the movie. A.W. Mathis says, can you list a few players with dual eligibility in standard CBS leagues that can be targeted for bench depth in later rounds?
Well, Marcus Semien. He works for everything.
Yeah, Prado still. I mean, he's really exclusively a late rounder at this point, but
Brett Lawry's exclusively a late rounder. He's second and third. Off the top of my head, I'm running out of names.
Yeah, I may have to cheat here and go to my position eligibility worksheet that I've got.
Please do.
I could see Stephen Vogt becoming triple eligible. He's first base only right now, but I think catcher for sure, and maybe outfield also. He played a good bit there last year.
I'm going to give you a guy that I drafted in our AL-only league that I think is going to have a better year than people might think, Garrett Jones. I think he's actually going to end up with a lot of playing time because Teixeira or Beltran or both are going to get hurt.
A-Rod.
Or A-Rod.
Yeah.
I think it makes sense for Garrett Jones to be the DH for the Yankees against righties. I don't know if they'll do that when A-Rod's healthy, but I think at some point Garrett Jones is going to get everyday playing time due to injuries, and I think he could be actually pretty sneaky in Yankee Stadium.
There are a few names that I missed on here. Asdrubal Cabrera, Brett Lowry, Arizmendi Alcantara. I think those are all worth. And a little bit deeper, you could think about Luis Valbuena.
Cool.
Yeah.
Next one is from hashtag COTW. I didn't know you could hashtag a Twitter handle.
I didn't know your
Twitter handle could have a hashtag in it. Ellsbury or Brantley in a dynasty head-to-head points league? Ellsbury or Brantley?
Brantley.
Agreed.
Next up, Jim says, Dear Mr. Heenan, Mr. Hart, and Mr. Fuji.
Nope.
Heenan, wasn't that a wrestling thing? Bobby Heenan or something? And
if
there's
it was,
obviously Bret the Hitman Hart.
Yeah, I would not know.
That sounds like a good guess.
Can you recommend a few NL-only outfielders to target cheap in my auction? We start 5 outfielders. So cheap NL-only outfielders.
Ooh, I could tell you better next week when we're having our NL-only auction. That's the deepest leagues we play in by far. But pulling up my NL-only rankings here, which now require the use of a drop-down menu to see the position-by-position looks, so I'll do that. All right, so cheap late-round outfielders in an NL-only league.
How about David Peralta? I think he should be pretty affordable.
I mean, I have him going for $8, so I don't know if that counts as cheap, but certainly he's an NL-only option. If I'm going a little further down, more to like $1-$2 guys, I think Andrew Lambeau, who I talked about on yesterday's podcast, they're discussing giving him 350 at bats or so in Pittsburgh, and that's a guy who showed 900 OPS potential in the minors. Scott Van Slyke was great as a part timer for the Dodgers, and I would think he would still be platooning with Carl Crawford, and it's not like Crawford's a model of health there. So he has some cheap power potential. Drew Stubbs.
Ah, there we go.
Yeah. Nearly went 20-20 last year as a part-timer for the Rockies. Terrible on the road, but, you know, that...
Cool.
He's still playing in Colorado, so...
Juan Lagares. I think he's a little underrated. Some batting average potential. A few steals. Pretty good late-round value or low-bid value there.
Oh, Michael Taylor. I like him a lot. For the Nationals, he'll be starting, assuming Worth isn't ready to go yet. And I think his power speed combo, he could make Span expendable in his walk year.
Yeah,
so.
Harper will be hurt. You know, Harper will miss 30 games.
You know it's weird. You know who's a kind of a low end NL outfielder now? Ichiro.
Ichiro's awful.
And I don't see how he's going to play unless somebody gets hurt.
Yeah, defensive replacement. Is Ozuna not a good defender?
No, they're all pretty strong defenders.
Yeah, then. I mean, he's a useful player, actually. Ichiro's kind of guy, like, the more he played, the worse he got. But he could come in and get a nice pinch hit for you. I think he's going to be an asset for the Marlins.
For the Marlins, yes. For your fantasy team, probably not.
Not so much. You know, there was an AL-only outfielder that I wanted to take so badly, and I didn't think anyone was going to take him. And, like, six picks before I was set to take him late, Anthony Gose got selected.
Yeah, I thought that was a good pick.
Yeah, if he bats second,
of Tigers present.
If he bats second for the Tigers, I think his runs scored could make him relevant in deeper leagues. You guys think there's a chance there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, good. I'm not crazy. Chris in the ICT.
Says, Wichita, we know that now.
Mr. Heenan, Mr. Hart, and Mr. Fuji are all wrestling managers. It was Jimmy Hart, not Bret Hart.
Fuji, okay.
Yeah, so Chris says, Dear Chevy, John, and Dan... I guess this would be the good time to bring up SNL.
Yeah.
How much do you weigh your own rankings versus ADP value during the draft? And does the answer change when it comes to your favorite sleepers or breakouts? Example, Al has Phil Hughes ranked 73rd. If Hughes is Al's highest ranked player available at 73, would he take him or would he take someone lower in his rankings like Alex Cobb and risk losing out on Hughes even though his ADP is around 180? Not meaning to pick on Al. A similar question could be asked of Scott with Shoemaker or Fires. No,
and I don't feel picked on. And this actually came up in our draft yesterday.
Yeah.
AL only.
It's a great question.
Hughes was actually not the top, but second from the top in my queue for quite a while. And whoever it was that was right ahead of him, I actually wound up taking him. But I thought about this scenario and thought about doing, because Cobb was right below him, and thought about doing that very thing. So I didn't do it in this particular occasion, but I have done it in the past, and certainly we'll do it in some drafts this year, which is to
take a guy lower in your rankings,
my own rankings, because
knowing
I'm
you
so
can get the higher guy
later.
Yeah,
ADP is extremely important to understand.
And I probably, I kind of tailor my rankings more to fit within ADP so that, you know, I'm not leading anyone to believe they should take this guy when I know they can have him later. You know, like I want to push him down a little in my rankings to an appropriate spot to draft him and just highlight him as a sleeper or a breakout or whatever in column form. But, you know, there's limits to doing that, I think, and the Shoemaker ranking, especially, I just think it's so clear cut to me he's that good that I don't want to mess with it there.
Here's a tweet from Jay Eddie. Cargo, Fielder, Kipnis. Who you taking first in Roto? Should we trust bounce backs? Carlos Gonzalez, Prince Fielder, Jason Kipnis. Who you taking first in Roto? Should we trust bounce backs?
This is going to answer both questions. I'll go Kipnis first because I do have by a lot the most confidence in his ability to bounce back this season. And it would go in reverse order, Kipnis, then Fielder, then Cargo.
I feel like Cargo is going to go first in a Roto league, though, right? I don't think he's the most trustworthy to bounce back. He might be the least trustworthy, but just because of what he could be, I mean, could be a first-round type player. I think he could go in round five or six, and we're probably talking seven or eight for Kipnis.
Josh Alderotti on Twitter. Biggest risk-reward pitcher? Richards, Tanaka, or Cliff Lee? Can you discuss these three as mid-round picks? Garrett Richards, Masahiro Tanaka, Cliff Lee.
Richards, Tanaka. All right. I like the pronunciation there.
From me?
Yeah. Yeah, you see, the first time you said it.
I said Richards.
Richards.
Weird, but that was that wasn't like an accent. That was just a stumble.
Sure.
The biggest sort of gap between risk and reward, I would say, is Tanaka. Because I think if he is healthy, then he's an ace.
Yeah. But if you're interpreting this question as who do I like most, it's Richards in a landslide, because I'm not really worried about them all. I think the way the wind's blowing, it's looking more and more likely he's going to be ready to go from the very beginning. And coming off a knee injury, I think he'll just pick up where he left off as an ace.
I like Richards.
Richards. Tanaka. I read an interesting article about Tanaka. I'm trying to pull it up now so I don't get anything wrong. Yeah. So, Yankees ace Masahiro Tanaka taking a gamble with elbow, says Ron Darling. This is a New York Daily News article, and Darling made a good point. So everybody do this now. Just take your index finger and your middle finger, and just spread them out as far as you can. And you can feel the strain on your forearm when you do that. And the point was, is Tanaka going to be able to throw his splitter as much? Because that's his best pitch. That's his strikeout pitch. It's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
But he was very reliant on it. And there was some thought that might have contributed to it. I remember, I think, Buster Olney talking about that on a Sunday Night Baseball telecast or something. And, then I saw Darling talk about, you know, whether or not he'll be able to throw it as frequently. And what kind of pitcher is that going to make him if he can't throw his best pitch? Now, he's got so many pitches that I feel like he can compensate maybe with his slider. And I went and looked at the Brooks Baseball charts. I'll look at it again now just to make sure. But the last two starts that Tanaka made after the long layoff, didn't seem like he threw it any less. So I don't know if you guys have any thoughts or cares about that.
Yeah, but I think those last two starts were still revealing in a way. Like, just because he's able to pitch through it doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be as good as we know he can be. And maybe he was throwing the splitter just as much then, but you know, we can't say that it was as effective. I mean, clearly he wasn't. He was looking like, before the elbow started bothering him, so it was like a 16-start stretch at the beginning of the season, he was basically the best pitcher in the AL, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
And then those last two starts, one was passable, one was terrible. Neither was Tanaka. And that's, I worry about that beyond just the, okay, how long is he going to last with this elbow?
He did not throw the splitter any less. In fact, he throws so many damn pitches. Four-seamer, sinker, cutter, curve, slider, change, split. But there's really nothing that stands out over those two starts. I also think that if you look at his game log, he did not face opponents twice very often. Almost every opponent he faced was for the first time. And I don't think he's going to be as effective. I think he's going to be really good if he's healthy. I don't think he's going to be nearly as good as what we saw last year. That was kind of unsustainable. That was unfreaking believable. Okay, then. Moving on to Sander. Ah, cool name. Dear Kelly, Big Joe, and Crap Game.
Okay.
What is going on here?
Well, he tells us in the PS.
Oh.
Which is good, because I would have no idea.
The salutations are from Kelly Heroes, Clint Eastwood.
Kelly's Heroes. Well,
oh, Kelly's. Okay, he wrote Kelly Heroes. Clint Eastwood. Who's Telly Savalas?
Who's Kojak?
Okay.
Now you're going to say, who's Kojak?
I mean, I kind of know.
He loves you, baby.
I kind of know who Kojak is. And Don Rickles. I'm in a very unique 8-team mixed league where the position eligibility requires a player to play the position once every 2 weeks. Given that rule, how would you rate Hanley Ramirez and Evan Gattis as outfielders? I think we already answered this for Hanley, but let's do it again. Hanley and Evan Gattis as outfielders. And slugging percentage is an extra category.
You know, Gattis' value is really hurt in this format, because it's not so much about, oh, he'll be eligible at outfield now, as he won't be eligible at catcher, because I don't know that he's going to play there at all, really, with the Astros. You know, just thinking of him as a all-or-nothing power guy, he's down there in the Mark Trumbo range, I would think, which is, I don't have it open in front of me.
Yeah, I'm looking at my rankings, and I'd have Gattis kind of in the neighborhood of Jock Peterson, AJ Pollock, and, well, for me, I've got him as a bust, so I have him ranked low, Yoenis Cespedes. So yeah, that's like a number 40 outfielder, basically, the Gavs would be.
Yeah, that number sounds about right. You were saying you have Cespedes as a bust, though.
That's what I meant to say. Right, okay. Thank you. And then Hanley would be more like about a number 20 outfielder. He'd be on a par with like Alex Gordon and J.D. Martinez.
Okay. Let's go to Double H from somewhere colder than Miami. I don't think there is any place colder than Miami right now.
Oh, man.
It is freezing.
You get down here a couple days, and you forget all about what it's like up there.
It's freezing.
It's not literally. Though very
tonight,
close.
Tonight, baby. 35 degrees.
Yeah.
Insane. All right. 10-team, 6x6 Dynasty Roto League. Doubles are the added category. I will have a power-heavy team this year, including Trumbo and Chris Carter in my outfield. When one or both of them slump, my strategy is to sub in a player who could help prop up my batting average. So could you rate the following potential pickups with batting average in mind? Melky, AJ Pollock, John Jay. Time out real quick. Double H, you spelled John Jay wrong. Never, ever spell John Jay's name wrong. He's John Jay, for goodness sake. There's no H in John. So Melky Cabrera, AJ Pollock, John Jay, Nick Markakis, and Ben Zobrist. Melky, Pollock, John Jay, Markakis, Zobrist.
I think he was thinking of the first Supreme Court Chief Justice there with John Jay, maybe.
John Jay was the
co-author of the Federalist Papers.
That I knew. Yeah. I didn't know he was a Supreme Court Justice. Interesting.
The Chief.
Got a lot
Chief
to,
Justice.
Got,
Chief Justice.
Got a lot to learn about John Jay's namesake.
Yeah, you do. You know, my first reaction to this, even though it wasn't the first I expressed, how is Melky Cabrera, how is he not drafted?
Right.
I mean, he's obviously number one. He's a top 20 outfielder.
It's 10 teams, but yeah.
So, him, and then Pollock, and then Zobrist. I do have Zobrist ranked ahead of Pollock, but not because of batting average.
Oh, you know, it's tough. We keep going. John Jay's going to be last.
Yeah.
For us.
Yeah.
He is. First for Adam, but.
No, I mean, I'm not crazy. He's second. Aaron Brand on Twitter. Do you guys think Rusne Castillo plays center field or right field this year? I'm in a dynasty league with individual outfield position eligibility.
Seems like center's the plan. I mean, he could potentially struggle there and they flip him in bets, center and right, but center's the plan.
Philip Hambly, rate these shortstops. Danny Santana, Xander Bogaerts, and Starlin Castro. Danny Santana, Xander Bogaerts, Starlin Castro.
I will go Santana, Castro, Bogaerts.
Me too.
Cool.
And I like Bogaerts more than you.
Yes, you do.
This is from Brett.
Castro.
Sorry, this is from Brett. Hello, Chris, Addison, and Jorge. This one I know.
Yeah, Cubs prospects.
I know you hate keeper questions, but I have been in deep thought about this one. 14-team head-to-head league, keep three players. I'm keeping Altuve and Scherzer, so I need one more between Pujols, Arenado, and Springer. 14-team head-to-head league, Pujols, Arenado, and Springer. And we're going to skip that one because I hate keeper questions.
Aww.
Now I'm just playing. Who would you keep, Pujols, Arenado, or Springer?
Springer.
You know, Springer's on my bust list for this year just based on his going rate, but I do think if you're considering the long-term aspect... But it is just three players. I think I talked myself out of it. I'm going Arenado.
Springer is on your bust list.
Yeah,
huh?
I just don't see him as a third or fourth rounder. I think the potential reward is that high, but there's a lot of risk people aren't accounting for by taking him that early.
Greg in Houston, grade the trade. 12-team Dynasty Points League. I get Carlos Gomez and Carlos Carrasco. I give Adam Jones and Jeff Samardzija. So giving up Jones and Samardzija, getting Carlos Gomez and Carlos Carrasco in a 12-team Dynasty Points League.
Al and I just made a trade involving Carlos Carrasco in a Dynasty League.
I'll be happy to grade it.
Okay,
after we grade
this one.
It involves draft picks. I don't know how well that will work. But anyway.
I will give this a C-. It's really hard to not just give an even C. This is such an even trade, but... Samardzija, a little more, I guess, well, certainly more history, more reliability, I'll say, than Carrasco. And I do actually like Jones just a little bit more than Gomez.
I like Gomez more than Jones, but Not by as much as I like Samardzija more than Carrasco. And Carrasco is the player I love this year. So, I agree. C-.
And two more tweets. Matt Williams, where do you think Sorry. All right, give me your trade.
Well, it might be hard to grade because the format, and there's a lot of picks involved.
Oh, yeah.
So it's my Shane Green and first and third round supplemental picks for his Carrasco and his fourth rounder.
And what the heck those picks are basically all the rookies this year, the ones we know are going to be up this year and the ones we don't know are going to be up this year. Those go into a draft. It's 24 teams, so we're drafting rookies. I'm getting the first and third pick. He's getting the fourth.
The,
and
the
then
first
Carrasco
pick is,
for Green.
Yeah, the first pick's pretty valuable. It's going to be like one of the best rookies.
Yeah.
The third and fourth picks, they're, you could almost take them out of the equation. They're probably not going to be that valuable.
You're getting Carrasco, Scott?
I am.
No, he is. I'm getting the picks in Green. He's getting Carrasco.
I think I like it for Al. I'll give it a B- for Al.
Gotta say, gotta play the game. Gotta grade it.
Yeah.
Now, does it make a difference to you that Carrasco's gonna make like $4.5 million and Green's gonna make like $0.5
million? Oh, it's salary cap?
Yeah.
Oh, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of cap room.
Then it seems pretty even.
He does have a lot of cap room, more than me.
It seems pretty even.
This trade is not the least bit helpful to anybody.
I'm not sure about Shane Green. Well, it's actually very appropriate. Our next tweet is from Matt Williams.
Okay.
Where do you think Shane Green will be drafted in 2015 in a categories league?
There's a reason why we made that trade this morning.
Oh, there is.
Everything for a reason.
I could say that I watched more of Shane Green than any fantasy baseball analyst out there last year.
What do you think of Shane Green?
I was much more on board with Shane Green than anyone else on our podcast, whether it was you guys or Herc last year. I'm pretty confident in saying that. I thought his stuff was a lot better than someone who had like no hype, basically.
He throws awfully hard. Harder than you would think.
And he has a really good curveball.
Yeah.
I fear that he doesn't have enough of an arsenal, and he's going to get figured out this year. I fear that. But I think he'll be an average pitcher. I don't think he'll be anything special.
Where do I think he's going to be drafted? And I feel pretty much the same way about him, by the way.
Me too.
I think he'll be kind of like a reserve rounder in most 12-team mixed drafts, maybe late round.
Yeah. No, I agree with that assessment. He's, we assign auction values to how many pitchers? 108
yes.
Starters and relievers combined. And he's like the first or second starting pitcher who missed getting an auction value for me.
Would you rather have Irvin Santana or Shane Green?
Irvin Santana.
I think Green, actually.
Would you rather have Andrew Heaney or Shane Green for a bench spot?
Green.
Green.
Really?
Yeah.
You're not going to take the gamble on the upside there?
Well, it's not like Green doesn't have upside. I think Heaney does have more, but he has to have a job first, which is not certain. And Green's shown a lot more in the majors so far than Heaney has. So, yeah, I'll take Green.
Look, Green's got really good stuff. There's definitely upside there.
I did actually give him a dollar value, $2. So.
I don't want to sell him completely short. Flynn White says, I have the first pick in my Dynasty League. I am rebuilding. Would you take Moncada, Castillo, Betts, Betances, or DeGrom? Moncada, Castillo, Betts, Betances, or DeGrom? You guys are just going to say Betts.
Yeah, I'm thinking Betts.
Well, actually, no, I was thinking DeGrom, and it's really a tough call. But, yeah, I'd go DeGrom here.
Betts, Castillo, and DeGrom are the only three I'd be considering. But I think Betts has the best combination of safety and upside. And really, it's safety where he edges out DeGrom for me, because DeGrom kind of came out of nowhere last year, wasn't that much of a prospect. So I'm not really doubting his performance, but there is that lingering doubt that really isn't there at all for Betts.
We could have a different fantasy baseball landscape in a few years if they raise the strike zone, as has been rumored. It could really change things and make... Because I think the answer can't be DeGrom in this case, just because he's a pitcher, and pitchers are so much easier to find. But, that could change down the line if the strike zone changes and scoring goes up and hitters get better.
Yeah, it's hard to know exactly what to make of it. It does seem like offense would increase a bit, but I think it's kind of gotten ridiculous how good pitchers are, so I don't know that would be a bad thing. And You know, it's one of those things. Both this and eliminating the shift, the things that have been discussed, when I first hear about it, it's just like, no, why would they do that? I hate changing things. But then, you know, I read more about them both, and I'm kind of for it.
Like eliminating the shift?
Yeah, I think it makes sense. I don't think it's at all an unreasonable rule to say the shortstop has to be on the left side of the bag and the second baseman has to be on the right side of the
bag. I think
it's
unreasonable.
I think, I mean, there's alignment rules in every other sport.
But you can play five infielders. What do we do in that scenario?
How often does that happen? And how
often
does
allowed.
It pay off?
It's still allowable.
Well, would it be? I don't know that it would necessarily have to be.
But
I don't think
be.
That should be a deal breaker.
No, I don't like outlawing the shift, but I have no problem with them adjusting the strike zone.
It sounds like they're just getting the strike zone back to where it should be,
right?
Because it's been gradually
That's
sinking.
Exactly the point. Yes,
exactly. I mean, there's a little more, I guess, subjectivity with that. Whereas, you know, with the shift, I mean, that's a tactic that's being used to challenge the hitters, and it's I don't know. I just don't really see the rationale.
No, look, I think that the shift is going to cause minor league hitters and young hitters who are in middle school, high school right now, to start hitting the ball to opposite field and become better hitters. I think it'll be a good
it's
thing
going,
over time.
It's going to decrease power numbers even more, though, if that happens.
But
we may see like league leaders in the 20s, and I don't really like that idea.
I don't know. They'll still get your sluggers. And I think Fangraphs pointed it out that the shift is not the reason why scoring is down.
Oh, I don't know
about
that.
Well, in terms of batting average.
You can
maybe robbing some power if you've got
okay
players
fine. It's not the reason.
Well,
for batting.
I think over time
strike
it'll
zone
rob,
is
it'll over time it'll rob players of power because of what you were saying. Kids learning to hit differently, but
there's nothing wrong with that though. Hitting the ball
home runs are great. What are you talking about?
You know what? I like 300 hitters better than 240 hitters.
But
even if the 240 hitters are hitting a lot of home runs.
But we know players like
strikeouts are not great. Strikeouts suck.
Mark Teixeira and Brian McCann are both extremely talented hitters, and the shift has just ruined them.
Well, because
they still hit
like,
a lot of home
I
runs.
I feel like it's kind of a cheap tactic.
But they still hit a lot of home runs, but they're not exciting to watch. Like, yeah, great, they get a home run, they strike out
I mean,
all
yeah,
the time.
A weakness in their ability is being exposed.
I don't know that if the rules were different, though, it wouldn't be a weakness.
Well, but again, why legislate that? Why legislate where the infielders or where anybody on the field can play other than the pitcher, of
because
course.
It
and the catcher.
It limits it limits the number of major league viable hitters to ones who hit in all directions, and I don't think we need to be limiting that with the direction.
I don't
want to
legislate
going.
The outcome.
You know, I think
let the strategy dictate what the outcome is.
I agree, and I think that shortening the strike zone and raising the low strike will accomplish that, and I think the offense will go up even with shifts. I think that's probably a bigger factor.
I mean, the thing, but like the way somebody like McCann or Teixeira combats the shift would be to lay down a bunt, right? That's even cheaper. So you're getting one cheap tactic
but never
to top
happens.
Another cheap tactic,
no,
and they're just out cheaping each other.
The way to beat the shift is either hit a home run or to hit the ball to opposite field. You know?
Well, the best way to make sure you hit it to the opposite field is to bunt it.
They're not
going to
bunt it.
It's going to start happening more, I think.
They've been saying that for you every freaking offseason. I might start laying down a bunt. You'll see. Never happens.
Well,
these guys aren't bunting. Yeah, first of all, it's not that easy.
I was going to say, not that many still, hitters are good bunters.
It's still a relatively new phenomenon, and I think we are going to see it happening more and more because the frustration level is just going to get so high.
You know what? If it happens and it works, then good. Then we'll get rid of the shift. We'll naturally get rid of the shift. If they're bunting successfully, teams will stop shifting them. But I don't think they can do it. I don't think Mark Teixeira and Brian McCann can lay down a bunt that's good enough to beat out the throw from the catcher or stay fair. And you don't want them getting to first base.
I just don't think it's unreasonable for the rules of a sport to say fielders have to stand in a certain area. I mean, there's restrictions to how football teams line up, you know?
There's restrictions to basketball, too. You can't be on defense 3 seconds in the paint unless your guy is there, unless your man is in the vicinity. So I agree with you. I agree with you that it's not crazy. I don't think it should happen.
Okay.
But it's good art. This is fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Hey, weigh in. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. We'd love to hear your opinion. And we'll be back next week with some more position previews. We have shortstop, we have outfield, starting pitcher, and relief pitcher to talk to you about. For Al Melchior, thank you, Al.
You are welcome, Adam.
Scott White, thank you.
Thank you, Adam.
I'm Adam Azer. Have a great weekend, everybody.